with Glenn Grossen in a...
Galicia.
Do you know what the date is?
About the 5th.
5th? Yeah, it is. On June 6th, the year 2000.
Yeah.
And this is on the Korean War. All right, Glenn. Please tell me the general outlines of your life leading up to the 1950. Up to 1950, where you lived, your family situation, etc.
Okay, Tom. I was born and raised on a dairy farm over on Phillips Road, which is also within a mile or so where I am right now. And I grew up in a family of 6 boys, and I was the 5th of 6. And I stayed in that dairy as went all through, well, I was in on this dairy farm, I was all through grade school, which was in Rock Creek, which was all consolidated into West Union. Then I went to Hillsboro High School, and from high school I went to Oregon State College, which is now Oregon State University. And it was during my time in college there that the Korean War had broken out, and they didn't call it a war, it was a police action, is what it was called. And the thing was is that the North Koreans were coming into South Korea and taking them over, and they hollered for help, I guess, through the United Nations.
All right.
And so the United States sent their Navy over there with their big ships. I think the battleship Missouri was one that came in on that. And I don't know whether you want to go on to the war right now or...
No, I'll go through some questions.
Yeah, oh, okay. But anyway, it was there then when they started the draft program. And so I got that letter from, started out, what is it, greetings from the President of the United States. You've been selected.
How'd you feel about being drafted?
Well, I wasn't just too concerned about it. I thought, well, I'd be in the Army. And on the day he was inducted, we got on the bus out here in Hillsboro, and I had made friends from another inductee from Forest Grove up there, Bill Preston. We was talking about what was to be expected and everything else, and he was going down there to have a physical and you take your IQ tests and all that kind of stuff. And when we were down there in the induction office, they come along and told us that the Marines were taking some people that day. And Bill and I, we kind of got together, and they wanted to know whether anybody wanted to enlist in the Marines that day. We talked it over, and they figured that we'd seen probably too many of them gung-ho John Wayne movies and stuff, and we probably would stay with the Army. And it went on that way through the day, and then pretty soon they come in and asked for volunteers for the Marines. And there was a bunch, or a few, that they volunteered, raised their hand, took a step forward, and we were then taken away, and they was to be sworn into the Marine Corps. And in the meantime, we was still there, thought, well, we could meet that obstacle. And sometime later, we came back into the room there and said the Marines didn't get enough today. We had more volunteers. So we still didn't volunteer. So he said, that's okay. So he steps out, and a little while he comes back later, and he says, you line up. When I call your name, you take a step forward. And we'd already been sworn into the U.S. Army.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, lo and behold, Bill and I both had to take a step forward, and we were in the Marines. So we were sworn into the Marines, and it was off to San Diego to boot camp.
Hmm. What branch did you serve in?
The 1st Marine Air Wing, which was, they were at El Toro down there in Southern California, out of Santa Ana, south of Los Angeles.
Okay.
That was my main duty station then during the war. But first, what was your question?
What branch you served in and what was your job?
Oh. What my job was is, well, when you're inducted there, they ask you what you want to do when you're in there. You get a choice there. And I thought I wanted to get into heavy equipment or something like that, you know, get a hold of some of that expensive stuff to play with. Mm-hmm. And then they asked, what's your second choice? And I just couldn't come up with one right away. And then he said, well, I see you were raised on a dairy farm, you know, and his thinking, I guess, was dairy farm food or something like that. He says, I'll put you down for cook. Okay, second choice. But when the day you got out of boot camp down there, they fill you out there and they start telling you where your next duty was going to be. And lo and behold, mine was to go to Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, at a food service school. So that's where I was, a Marine cook. Went to cook and baker school.
In your opinion, why were we fighting in the Korean War?
You tell me, Tom. The thing was, North invaded into South Korea, and we sent our Navy over there, I guess, and there must have been some, but that only lasted about 8 days.
Mm-hmm.
And they chased the communists back out of South Korea. But for some reason, they decided that they would want to go in and invade North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, being a little bit cynical, I was wondering whether they wanted to prolong the war because that makes a little boom in the economy, you know, when you got a little wartime economy going.
Yeah.
And they thought that wouldn't be too difficult, but we'd just go in there and into North Korea and unite that, I guess, with South Korea. It must have been an idea. But the thing was, is our troops were ill prepared to go into that North Korea. They thought, I guess, it would last just a little while. But it went on and on till I guess winter time hit, And our troops were over there without any cold weather gear. And I guess that winter was just savage over there. It had gone down to 30 below zero and stuff. And they were going up through North Korea. And MacArthur, he was heading it. And he saw then that the Chinese were coming in. I guess the Chinese and the Koreans are kind of cousins. And we were meddling around up there in North Korea and communist Korea. MacArthur said that he was going to have to go cut them supply lines over in China because they had them scouted out and they were coming into North Korea to help North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And then lo and behold, President Harry Truman, he fired him. Generals that knew the most about any warfare with Orientals over there and stuff. And so I guess what had happened then is that the North Koreans then they figured they had it pretty well sewed up in their favor.
Yeah.
Because they had this multi-million army coming in there to help them.
Yeah.
And here then, and we were just a small potato, I guess, over there. Even if they had old equipment, we didn't have equipment that was that good either.
Yeah.
Ours was mostly all left over from World War II. And then our boys were sitting in there with probably with M1 rifles and Browning automatic rifles and a few machine guns.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're supposed to wage war against all these Chinamen. Well, I'll go for the next question. I might expand on that later.
Okay. All right, what did communism mean to you at that time? In contrast to what it means to you today?
Well, I mean, we was told plenty about communism when we was in the service there. I mean, they were to be hated and we was
mm-hmm.
trained to be professional killers and we was going to go after them communists.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is I always got a vision of about what it would be to be a communist, you know. I thought about it, you know. And I thought that being in the military was pretty much a perfect example of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they owned everything. They said they even owned you.
Yeah.
And all you were to do was to take orders and do
mm-hmm.
what you were told.
Yeah.
And even when it comes down to occupations, I don't know, what are your plans and lifetime occupation? Do you have one?
Probably to start my own business.
Yeah. So you're free to do that.
Mm-hmm.
If you was under communism, they would probably run you through a test or something and tell you, right now we need some more sanitary service people out there.
Yeah.
I'll pick you to do that. And you don't say no.
Yeah.
They'll tell you what you want to do. And it's kind of like what happened in the service there. They picked my occupation to be in the service too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether I preferred to be cook. It wasn't bad. I have no complaints about that. It was good duty at the end anyhow. But those are the type of things. They own you and tell you what to do, and somehow or other people don't function just too well under that type of
yeah
raised in a Calvinist Presbyterian, and that means you had free will.
Yeah. Did you think that communism was a serious threat to the U.S.?
At one time, it pretty much was. I don't know. I lived through the time when I was back. I guess I was out of the service. But they were talking about building bomb shelters, you know. Russia, they just kept arming them up.
Yeah.
They went in and stole a lot of the technology that the Germans had on these here rockets and stuff. And they were busy building bombs and everything else. And, of course, that wasn't the original fear we had, but there was people building bomb shelters here, and he was telling everybody should build one. But going back to World War II, when I was about, I guess, 12 or 13 years old, when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. And as a kid, I can remember that as being a scary time because we didn't know how far the Japs could go and how far they would go. If they bombed Pearl Harbor, maybe they was going to keep on coming and they was going to hit the West Coast here.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had civilian defense organizations started up. We had to black out all our outside lights and cover our windows so we didn't have lights, no yard lights burn. And even the automobiles, somebody come up with the idea that if you put blue cellophane or something over the headlights, that would darken them out. But that's a funny thing, I suppose, if you're taking physics down there in school, found out that was absolutely the wrong thing, because blue is the last color to lose its identity in the dark. It should have been red. But anyway, worrying about communism, there was some concern about it, that they were arming up, you know, and it might start something someplace. And, of course, that's what they did. They were messing around in Cuba. They were messing around there in Korea and in other places, trying to expand in their empire.
Did you favor using the atomic bombs in, the atomic bomb in Korea?
I think that is how, what stopped the stalemate in Korea. When Truman fired MacArthur, and then we tried to negotiate a peace there with Korea, and they wouldn't negotiate because we had the advantage.
Mm-hmm.
And they could run a stalemate there, and that was one of the bad things about it was happening. The Chinese, they had all the hills fortified and everything else, and we had American troops over there, and they would run up and chase them Chinamen off the hill, and they'd shoot a few, and then they'd shoot a few Americans, and that's the way that was going on and on. They'd never negotiate.
Yeah.
And we were losing people all the time, and they were too, but they didn't care. And because they had plenty.
Yeah.
And so this was going on for quite some time, and then it so happened that old Truman's term ran out, and Eisenhower, he got interested, and he didn't like the way things are going, so he ran for president. And one of the promises he made was that he was going to stop that Korean War over there. And, of course, he got elected. And it was in probably 4 months that in time he was elected, he kept all his promises, went over there and he talked to them people. And I believe that's what he told them, that if they weren't going to go to the negotiating table, he would escalate the war, and he probably had the atomic bomb in his arsenal.
So do you think it was just like, it was good that he used it as a threat that to end it?
But well, certainly I would be, because yeah. That saved a lot of lives.
Yeah.
Saved our people. And being this type of guy he was Supreme Commander of World War II. And he had a lot to do with orchestrating that big, huge war. And they knew what he was made of, and when he talked, they believed him, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And he knew how to wage war, real war.
Did you fear that this war would lead to World War III, with the USSR getting involved with the...
With the Russians?
Yeah.
There was always that concern that didn't, to me personally, I wasn't just too concerned about it.
Yeah.
There was always that, they were always saber-rattling. They had some of their leaders there, they was threatening to bury the United States and do all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But, I didn't just lose too much sleep over it.
Yeah. So where were you stationed at?
It was, after I got through Cook and Baker School over there in Camp Lejeune, I ended up kind of high in the class. I was going to maybe make a pretty good cook, I don't know.
Yeah.
But that's the way they gave out. They had all these duty stations coming up open. And the thing was, is then I was about on a second choice. And then there was another friend of mine that made in cook school there. And I could have got a choice there, Washington, D.C., and some other places and some kind of anxiety. But he gave me a pep talk and told me the real place to go would be Southern California down there in Santa Ana. It's a good liberty down there.
So you guys got sent over to Korea?
No, we got sent to down here to El Toro, which was a Marine Air Base. And when we got there, we found out that yes, there was a shortage of cooks. I mean, the this was a de-embarkation center. I mean, they'd bring in troops when they were trained, a lot of draftees. They would train in Pendleton or Camp Lejeune or something. They would send them to El Toro. On there, they would pick up their gear that they needed for going to some of it to go to battle station over in Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they would keep building up troops. They'd keep coming in. And I was then attached from my Marine, I was in a communications company, but then I was then reattached to the station down there in El Toro. And so I was put in this mess hall where we fed all these people that were coming in and rotating out.
Yeah.
People they had, after they had so many months,
mm-hmm.
over there and then he'd come back.
Yeah.
But anyway, that would build up there and our mess hall would feed up to 2,000 men at a meal. Sometimes in the biggest days when it was really filled up. And the way it was set up, the mess hall was supposed to have 21 cooks. And about 100 messmen, that was just regular Marines that pulled mess duty for 1 month, would have to come in there.
Yeah.
And instead of having 21, there was 9 of us hit in there. And
for 2,000 men?
Yeah, man. Well, 9 on our watch.
Yeah.
There was 2 watches.
Oh, man. That's still a lot of...
Yeah, but it was calls for 21 on a watch. And there was a few months there that we really did have to work. I mean, mm-hmm. It was... But we all pulled together and managed and then actually got really pretty good at it, pretty efficient, so we was getting along all right, but we'd sure get tired sometimes,
yeah.
You know, when we pulled the long watch, but...
Good thing you weren't over there in the -30 degree.
Yeah.
Oh, that would've been bad.
Yeah, well, yeah, cooking out there in one of them outdoor ranges. But anyway, that was kind of how that wound up. But what was the next question?
Okay. I'll go with, how were veterans received when they came home?
I don't know, kind of quietly.
Really?
Yeah, and nobody ever said anything to me or made any noise about it.
So it's
but
the
thing is though there was a certain amount of disgust, I guess. We knew that it was a kind of a lousy war. Well, they never did ever call it a war.
Yeah.
It was still police action, as far as I know. We never really went to war.
Yeah.
Police action. But they killed troops over there. And I came back and I could have going back to college, I went down there one day and took some of them tests again. The guys advised me that I probably should go back and continue my education. But after that long, I thought maybe I better start back to work. So there was another thing I thought I would like. I got a job maybe downtown, one of them fancy jobs. Work 9 to 5, all that other stuff. But when I went out to check on that, there was a kind of a recession on. They say, oh, we're not hiring, we're laying off people, you know, and stuff like
yeah.
that. So then I started out on my own, although I still had the connection with the dairy farm over there too, which was helping my dad over there.
Yeah.
But I never found anything bad about it.
Yeah.
But I didn't just go around advertising that I was a war veteran and needed all that other stuff.
Yeah. Did civilians have an accurate picture of what was going on during the war, do you think? Do you think they really realized
that? Not really. I don't think they even worried about it too much.
Yeah.
Except if they had somebody in it. I think things were going on pretty much the same, like World War II. I mean, everybody was putting in the war effort,
yeah.
You know. You worked in the shipyards or you did something in the war industry or someplace. But this was hardly a ripple, as I recall. It's another thing that's kind of... I still remember World War II, so you don't want to hear anything about that. But during World War II, you know, that was, it goes back to that communist business again.
Yeah.
But all the land that the Allies took over, you know, we had to then fell it upon, well, George C. Marshall. He went over there and he found out that these people were starving to death in Europe and stuff because their country was just all tore up and shot up and everything else. And he says, we can't let that happen. So the United States then did a real honorable thing, you know, is that they instituted a Marshall Plan, and we just shipped things like, oh, get out into Japan, into Europe, and tried to get them to function again, where probably the communists come in there and kind of exploited them.
Yeah.
Kind of enslaved them too, I don't know, maybe in some cases.
Yeah.
And then if they had something good, they just haul it off too, you know, just kind of plundered them.
Mm-hmm.
And the United States then did go in there and didn't do that. They took care of them people then. And of course, when they had that Marshall Plan going on, farming, it was really pretty good in this country. I mean, prices were good. Everything had a market. And things were kind of booming. I thought farming was a pretty good occupation in there for a while.
Let's see here. Do you receive any, did you or do you receive any benefits from being a veteran, like from the government?
Oh, yeah, I could have, but I didn't. I could have got, I could have got my 5220, well, that means, what, $52 a week for 20 weeks or something when you get out, until you got organized. He says, don't take it unless you need it. Save it. And then, of course, I could have had a 4 years free ride of college again.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't take it. I could have got a state GI loan at about 4% interest. I didn't take that either, but I did take a federal farm home loan at 4% interest.
And that's what you have all this with?
Well, and they didn't build the one, the big greenhouse with that.
That's
but that's another story too, again. But anyway, yeah, that was about all that I took. I guess I'd be entitled to a tombstone and all that from the Marine Corps and all that kind of stuff. Well, I kept my GI insurance. He was insured when he went into service there for $10,000. And they always talk about that, well, if anybody lost his life at them on the battlefield, the way they tried to say it nicely, he didn't say he got shot, he'd say he just bought the farm back home. But anyway, I kept that. Now $10,000 don't seem like too much after 40 years. The inflation is kind of, that wouldn't buy a farm anymore.
Yep. Let's see here. Was your military commitment to the South Korea worth it in the end, do you think?
I don't know. Anyway, South Korea has been doing well now since we've been in there. Of course, the thing isn't settled over there either.
Yeah.
We still got troops there. And it's still settled at that 38th parallel. So it's still a hot spot over there. And I hope you don't have to go over there and settle it.
Yeah.
Because we didn't get it done. wasn't settled for good. Well, and I guess they're rattling their sabers over there in North Korea now, yet even.
Really?
Oh, yeah. They would like to take over. Of course, I guess they're desperate over there. They have famines and all kinds of trouble. And all the money that the government can play is they want to make war machines with the idea that maybe they'd go in there and invade South Korea again.
Is there anything else you'd like to share with me?
Oh, do you get to any of your questions?
Yep, the final one. I just wondered if there's anything else that you'd like to add.
Actually, I talked to, was able to talk to certain guys that, you know, when they rotated back and stuff, and spent some time over there in North Korea, and a lot of our troops came back pretty bitter.
Yeah.
They thought that it was really stupid and pretty foolish, you know, that they have to go out every day and chase them Chinamen off the hill, and then next day they'd be back on. And then somebody's staying lying there, and then other thing too is some of the Marines, they were one of the guys that they went and run clear into North Korea too far, quite far up there, and I don't know whether you heard about the Chosin Reservoir, but that's when the Chinese come in, surrounded, and were cutting them off.
Oh yeah, I did hear about that actually.
And some of them guys, they come down between the mountains after the Marines, or the Chinese came in, and so they had to come out of there with guns pointed at them, and every once in a while the Chinese would shoot a few of them, and I mean, they were scared. I mean, talk about Friday, it was like a fish in a barrel, you know.
Yeah.
And I know one of my friends there that came back there, he's talking about, he was pretty concerned and pretty worried. Coming down through there, and so they started breaking open their first aid kits that they carried, take the morphine out of it and eat that to get to keep their nerve up. To come out of there.
Did you hear anything about POWs from that?
Well, we know that one of your friends over there in Banks, Verbort, Gene Evers, he got shot down. He was a POW. And he had a bad experience there. He was even tortured and everything else. He didn't have to write papers on him. He was supposed to be on this airplane to check out radio equipment. I guess he wasn't carrying all the right papers or something. But when they got shot down and captured him, they treated him like he was a spy.
Oh, really?
And the thing was, is he came back pretty bitter.
I bet.
But he just first talked about it. I think that story showed up now. It was just lately much. He never said much about it. And then another guy I went to grade school with. Maybe interesting. I don't know whether you need that for your deal, but he got lost in action over there. I guess killed in action, but they've never been found. And there's a bridge up there off McKay Creek up towards Dixie Mountain. What is that? Collins Road up there.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little bit of one-way bridge that the county had put in there. There's a memorial plaque to Peter Burkle, who'd been lost in action in Korea. You find few Korean monuments, yeah. But there's one out there.
That'll be useful for us. Maybe we might get a picture of that or something.
Oh. Well, I could. It's quite a trip out there sometime if you wanted to go out. I can show you where it was.
Maybe I might call you about that. Thank you very much. This has been some very, very helpful information.
Well, I don't know if that's all you need to know.
Yeah.